Kia ora, this is Christoph El Chuento. I'm here today to talk about my new record, Circle of Friends.
Last time we had you on Totally Wired was after you released the record with Lucky Lance a few years ago. Since then, you've released a tape with Brandon Cherez as well, so I wanted to check in and see where this album sits in terms of the timeline around writing and recording.
Yeah, to be honest, it's funny because this record, I'm pretty sure I made it before all the ones that you mentioned. The thing is, I had kind of a bit of a complex about releasing it because usually I'm just making something and just kind of chucking it out there with no lead-in or like real promotion or anything like that. But because there was so many people involved in this record, I really felt like I had to do it right by all the people that put their time and effort into it, which is why it kind of just ended up sitting on my old laptop for like 2 or 3 years, I want to say. Yeah, it's been finished for about that long, just waiting for the right time and yeah, right sort of thing to come along to help me to put it all together and bundle it up and release it in a way to kind of do it justice.
Casting your mind back then, what's the earliest memory you have from this project?
So I remember, I think it was when I found out that we were going to be spending quite a bit of time at home, like at the start of the lockdown sort of period. I locked into making a lot of music back to back, like hip hop beats and things like that. So everything you hear on this album started out as a hip-hop instrumental, you know, for lack of a better term, like a 4-bar loop of a sample based, and then just that kind of need to connect with people hit me in the middle of maybe the first lockdown and started like sending ideas out to probably Julian firstly. He's always sending me lots of drums and stuff like that. So yeah, what started for each track as a small hip hop beat kind of grew into these things that we hear today on this album. Usually when I start a project, I'm thinking of like the artwork and the whole end game. I'm thinking like that, but I guess with, you know, looking down the barrel of having all that free time, I was just thinking, I'm just gonna make things for my sanity and just to feel productive in that time. So I didn't have the intention of making an album out of those ideas, but before lockdown, I did have the intention of just collaborating more with people. Like, ideally, it would have been in person, I wanted to get better at making music with people because music's always been quite a private thing for me. So that was probably the set clear intention, was to do something along those lines. The other intention was to practice mixing live music again, like live instruments again, before going into doing the Trees album for Avantel. It was like I just wanted to brush up on, you know, mixing whole drum kits and you know, making things feel right. So in a sense, this music was like a practice project before going into making the Avantel album Trees.
Can you talk me through a bit more about the difference between working with live instruments versus sample-based beats?
I mean, each thing has its own charm to me. Like, I'm from a sample-based background, and I will continue to be sample-based. It's like you can't achieve a certain sound exactly with live instruments that you can with samples, no matter how hard you try. It's like the time period and the space that those things were recorded in is, you know, impossible to go back to. So that's the main difference with sampling. The difference with live instrumentation for me is just being able to take the music to a different place. With a sample, you're fairly restricted in sitting within that, you know, 4-bar loop, 2-bar loop, or whatever. So working with really skilled musicians is also a dream, and just like, I think this album is a testament to just like the level of musicians that we have in this country.
What does your setup look like at home?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's not too interesting for production nerds. Like, I'm not really like an equipment guy. I was, and I began to collect different things, and I got to a point where I was just like, I'm just using my laptop and Ableton, and I feel kind of cluttered with all the stuff around me. Like, take this stuff away from me. So yeah, to be honest, I do everything in Ableton on a computer. Anything outside of that is pretty bare bones. Like I like having cheap tape machines and speakers. I'm really into, you know, taking a sound and then amplifying it in a different kind of space. Like I'll take a guitar or something and record it dry into Ableton and then play it out of a cheap speaker in the hallway or something like that, and then pick it up at the other end with a microphone. But there's nothing too flash or interesting about the actual equipment. It's more like, yeah, the spaces and how I choose to treat the dry recordings initially.
Thank you.
Yeah, with Julian, quite often I'll just wake up to a like an email with a big folder of drums from Julian that I've got to chop up. I feel like he's just always recording drums and sending them out to people. So not often is it like, oh, can you play drums on this track and play the whole way through? And it's quite often my track will start with something that Julian has sent, and then I'll go on and add bass and keys and stuff from there. I think in this sense, it started with Julian, me sampling him, and then him going over and recording to the whole track. And very rarely when he does that, does it need editing or anything like that. I love the way that he plays. He's quite spontaneous, and he doesn't need to hear the track before he plays. He just plays, and then he almost predicts what the other instruments are going to do before it happens. And a lot of the things that you hear, like when Dan Hales is doing like certain things on the piano, Julian's drums are matching that, and there's no way to explain how he knew that that was going to happen. Like I've seen it happen too many times. It's almost like he can predict the future or something. So I first heard Maa, they had a track that just popped up on YouTube, and it was like, just kind of stood out to me, her delivery and tone and stuff like that. It was a really early demo, so I just reached out straight away. Like I love it when I hear a new rapper or singer that it's kind of just coming up, and this was really early on. I heard the track and I reached out, sent like a pretty big folder of beats. One of them might have been the track that this turned into, but Maa wrote like a whole track to this, and I ended up cutting it in half and moving her part all the way to the end of the track, because it felt like, in the scheme of the album, that first half of the verse just kind of set up everything else to, you know, to start off in the way that felt right. Does that make sense? Like, it started the album with a question, and then Lady's song at the end of the album answered that question.
What we gonna do when we get could be seen to be the truth. Where did we go wrong? I thought we were strong. Where did we go wrong? I thought we were strong.
I met Louis at we used to do these Thursday nights at Rikino's, which is a, I don't know if like the younger people know Rikino's, but it's long gone, but it was kind of like a high street, a bit of a institution. I just met Louis at Rikino's at like Mike Huddu's residency every Thursday night. He used to come up, and with Louis, he was just like, he was super hungry to record anything back in those days. And, you know, we ended up linking up and hanging out with Tom and Brandon Hayden and forming At Peace together. But it was just like, since I'm making an album with all these people in it, I have to include Louis. It's like one of my dearest friends for a long time now, so yeah, had to have Louis Tui involved.
Time keeps running till it's run away. This world, so much can't be explained. You're the only thing that makes some sense these days. So I can't give you up, no, not today. Cause I don't wanna, 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 I don't wanna.
All the piano that you hear throughout the album is Dan Hales from Wellington. In particular, like, something quite standout in that track is the key solo at the end, which is Guy Harrison just going insane. He just, Guy Harrison sent me like a bunch of him playing in MIDI, so I was able to have him play and choose any sound that I wanted to use out of it. And it's another one of those things where I felt like there was some real synergy between him and Dan Hales, even though they hadn't heard what each other had previously recorded. By putting them together, it felt like the two takes were talking to each other. Yeah, this one would be the last track that was recorded in the scheme of this album. And yeah, it was totally intended for Trees. We just had so many, we had about 40, 50 songs for Trees. And same sort of deal. It started out as like a pretty simple hip hop instrumental. We recorded it in the sessions that we did for the bulk of Trees, where we rented an Airbnb out at Piha, this like really beautiful spot. Yeah, when we decided that it wasn't gonna make the cut for Trees, it was like, I gotta put this on my album, because not only was I attached to the song, I was like attached to the actual recording session and the headspace that we were in. You know, going and swimming and like going running down the beach, playing basketball. Yeah, it was just like a really amazing week of music. So I wanted to like capture that feeling and have it on my album.
Yeah, so about a year ago I started feeling this burning sensation. I went to see a doctor about it. He checked me out, surveyed my empty lot behind my church, measured my growth and gave me a property evaluation. Said everything was financial, he poured me an Iceland black and sent me home with a script for a pumpkin and fit a scone. Told me take one every day and eventually the pain would numb. Said there might be a few side effects, like a lack of interest in art and inflated self-importance, and a general whitening around the face. But don't worry about it, he said. So I did what he told me and the symptoms went away. Told me I just needed a lifestyle change. Said all that empathy was giving me insomnia. Everything in moderation, he said, including ethnic diversity and social progress. So I started exercising more, joined a pump class, cut out gluten, spice, flavor, anything rich in cream or tradition. I was looking good. I lost about 70 acres of state house in 1 month, I was feeling great. People were finally noticing me, you know, not just the Western leader, I was trending on Twitter. I was somebody's fetish. Finally, I was a first tier suburb, you know, like Point Share of a blockhouse bay. But the other day I started feeling again, that burning sensation. I was drinking a Steinlager on tap at the new pub they built next to the RSA, Steinlager Pure, and I started feeling sick. I just remember looking down into the toilet bowl at a pool of mushed up gnocchi and gluten-free sourdough, thinking, what's wrong with me? So I went to get a second opinion. The specialist told me that there were irregular cells. Walking all through my op shops looking for novel secondhand jumpers and ironic tea towels that were all up in my back streets, jogging in expensive track pants. Turns out that burning sensation was due to a gentrifier. We're just hoping we caught it early enough that it hadn't spread to my main shops. Doctor said these things start out as something as simple as an avocado in the fruit and vegetable section, but if left untreated it could start interfering with the nervous system, or even worse, the local council. And from there it's possible that I might form a luxury residence, or worst case scenario, a real estate agent. The worst kind of cancer. A Ray White. See, the thing about those white blood cells is they don't integrate with the rest of the body. They just take over. Don't even say hi when you see them on the street. Thank you.
I met Troy. I was working as a chef, and a guy that was working as a dishwasher, his name's Trey. He's Troy's drummer, and they kind of grew up together. And he would bring in demos and say, "Oh, this is my friend from up north. He's like a really amazing guitarist and singer." It was really like clear and evident that he was going to be like a superstar one day. Hearing those demos, it was just like quite raw talent. Even though it was just like one guy with a guitar, he just seemed like a real natural. And then fast forward to when I was working on this album, it was just like a simple case of reaching out. He was super down and recorded it like straight away pretty much and played the guitar. Yeah, it's just like a pretty basic, easy process. Troy's like super talented and professional with how he operates. No egos either, you know, like he's just all about the music.
Are you content? They say the grass is always green on the neighbor's lawn. Who said you weren't the neighbor? I don't want to give up the ghost, but when you ain't appreciated by the ones you want to impress the most, no reason to stay. I want to go far away. No. It's in the tree.
Brother used to live, he used to have a shop in Kingsland, and Lady lived upstairs. So I was like 13 when I met Lady in Parks, and they've just always been there since then. Music can, especially in the world that we're kind of like seeing these days, like music can kind of reflect that. And sometimes I feel like it's nice when music is positive, but it's really hard to make music that's positive and not come out sounding like, you know, the Wiggles or something like that. So I feel like Lady really is good at like making music that makes people feel empowered and good about themselves, and that was just like a really beautiful representation of that.
Clearly. since my dosage.
This is Christoph Alciuento. You're listening to Totally Wired with Hunter on 95 BFM.